Hi, everybody. This is Andy Alford, the host of All Andy Alford. I want to let you know that our shows now are on Facebook Live, as well as right here on the All Andy Alford Podcast Network. So our shows are unedited, uncensored, and so full of content. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Follow us on our Twitter. It is at All Andy Alford, as well as on Facebook at facebook.com/AllAndyAlford. The views of All Andy Alford are those of Andy's and do not represent the Spotify Podcast Network.
Guess who's back?
All Andy Alford.
And a shot and a goal.
54 runs in the span. I'm going to shut out. Dumbino.
A hit to a home run.
Go!
Jeff. That's way back.
Put some extra relish on my hot dog.
Bear down, Chicago Bears.
Choo-choo, it's time for All Andy Alford.
Thursday afternoon, after a crazy 24 hours in the National Football League, we now know who the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers is. A familiar face from the team up north. We'll talk about that. It is NFC and AFC Championship weekend. Can Patty Mahomes beat Lamar Jackson in Baltimore? And can the Lions pull the upset and beat Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers? The Jackets. They played pretty good, and then the third period started. Another third period wasted away at Rogers Place. The road trip continues on the figure skating road trip. While we ride out the storm coming up this weekend, as we honor the 92-93-93-94 Toledo Storm hockey team. But the Walleye have big games this weekend. Divisional games that are very, very important. Royal Rumble this Saturday. Looking forward to seeing who is going to be writing their story or finishing the story. We'll talk about that. AEW last night was a rush job. We'll talk about that. We are underway for the Drive-On Championship in the LPGA, and so much more to talk about tonight, right here on this Thursday afternoon edition. Yes, a Thursday afternoon edition of All Andy Alford. And I love you guys, and welcome in to another edition of All Andy Alford today, right here on your exclusive home for me, and that is with the All Andy Alford Network, whether it be on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you listen to our podcast, wherever and whenever you listen to our podcast. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning into the show to hear what's happening in the sports world, as well as what's happening in my everyday life. And you can be a part of our show by following us on Twitter. It is at All Andy Alford. It is at All Andy Alford, as well as facebook.com/AllAndyAlford, as we do these podcasts live every time on Facebook Live. And welcome into the show today on this, the 25th day of January 2024. It is a foggy, damp, cold afternoon here in the Metro Northwest Ohio area. But, you know, the snow is starting to go away, and we're hearing it's going to be getting warmer and warmer as we're getting closer and closer. Saturday will start birthday week for yours truly, as my birthday will be falling this upcoming Saturday on the 3rd. So looking forward to that, looking forward to tonight, hanging out with a few friends from the Christmas Carol past. We're going to get together at Manhattan's and, you know, catch up and see how everybody's doing and talk, and I'm looking forward to that, especially for our good friend Bill Parson, who unfortunately passed on. We'll probably be honoring him tonight. Also, we got to talk about, you know, Royal Rumble that's happening on Saturday and the big weekend that's happening at the Huntington Center as we honor this Toledo Storm hockey team, the last championship that has been in the city of Toledo in professional hockey. We'll talk about that. We'll share some more memories tonight, as well as dive into the Jackets and the rest of the NHL tonight and talk about what's happening on the rink. Also, we'll dive into the battle of I-75 as our Bowling Green State University Falcons men's basketball team coming off the loss to Kent State will now head to Savage Arena this Saturday for a 2 p.m. tip-off against the University of Toledo Rockets, as the Rockets will play host to the game one of the two-game set against the Bowling Green State University Falcons. We'll talk about all that and so much more. It's good to be back with you guys tonight again, today, again on this 25th day of January 2023. And yes, two shows in 1 week. Can't believe it. Can't believe it. But we're going to first start off with the National Football League. And of course, the big news that broke last night was that Jim Harbaugh, the former coach of the Michigan Wolverines, has now signed a deal with the Los Angeles Chargers. Harbaugh, this is a big signing for him. It's going to be a five-year deal. He is going to coach the Los Angeles Chargers. And, you know, to go back to Harbaugh really quickly, you know, this is good to see. You know, they announced that Harbaugh's deal, a five-year deal, according to Adam Schefter. The only job you start at the top is digging a hole. So we now know you've got to earn your way, Harbaugh said in a statement. This organization is putting in the work, investing capital, building infrastructure, and doing everything within its power to win. Great effort equals great results, and we are just getting started here in Los Angeles. So the Chargers get the big splash. They get Jim Harbaugh, and it's good to see. I think he's a good fit to go out there. You know, it's a winning program. I think Justin Herbert is going to be learn the tutelage under Jim Harbaugh, but he's going to be in a division that's going to be very, very tough, especially with how the Raiders are performing as of late, the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs that are trying to hold on to extend their championship ways this upcoming weekend against Baltimore, and we'll talk about that here in just a second. And then you have, of course, the Denver Broncos with Sean Payton. It is a loaded division, and it's going to be a tough test for him. I know it's going to take a year, maybe a year, 2 years to get his, you know, get his offense and get his scheme into the swing of things. But, you know, it's Harbaugh, and that's how he rolled when he was in Michigan. You know, it took him a while, and we'll see. Now the question is, who is going to replace Jim Harbaugh at the University of Michigan? And the talk is, it's going to be the offensive coordinator that took his spot when he was on suspension. And I like that. I like the position that he's going to make. It looks like Moore's going to replace Harbaugh. But, of course, with being a public university, it has to be up for a week. And the jobs opening will be there, and they'll have interviews and stuff like that. Moore will interview, of course. And I think he's going to be the job. Can he continue the momentum that Michigan has? I don't know. Especially now with recruiting season just about done, you're going to have to be going to the transfer portal a lot to get these players. So it's an uphill test for Moore. I like Michigan's chances for next year to get in, you know, to continue the Big Ten championship ways. But at the same time, too, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they take a step back next season, this upcoming season. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. You know, and the coaching carousel continues in college, in the NFL. The Panthers have signed Canales as their head coach as well, too. It looks like it's going to be Bill Belichick in Atlanta. And, you know, that's going to be a surprise. That's a surprise to me. I thought he would go out and take either the Washington Commanders job. I mean, I would have loved, you know, when Harbaugh went to the Chargers yesterday, you know, a bit of me was still hoping that he would go to Chicago and be part of the Bears organization, and the coach that they have now become the offensive coordinator and Jim be the head coach, because it would just make sense. It would make sense that he would want to continue the path that is the redemption tour, because he was at Michigan, he got drafted at Indianapolis, and then he went to Chicago to play. Why not go back to Chicago in the Midwest roots and take that Michigan fan base and move them over to Chicago on the north, in the middle of downtown? It would make sense. But you go wherever you're needed. The money was available. He goes to the Chargers. It's going to be an interesting thing. You know, Mike Vrabel's still out there as well, too. The coaching carousel just continues. There's a lot of coaches that are still available for this upcoming year. And, of course, there's also a talk, and this is true, this might be Andy Reid's last season. And the talk is that Belichick could go to Kansas City. I don't see that happening. I see the Atlanta situation happening more than anything else, because he could go out and draft and make build this team back up. But at his age, I don't think he would want to do that. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of concerns going into this offseason. So we'll see what happens. Now, we get to this weekend, and this is a big weekend for the National Football League. Of course, conference championship weekend, and then we get the Pro Bowl, and then the big dance in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. But it's a big one. These are big two games, and these are the best two teams that we have available. And I will just lead first and foremost with the first game. It will be at 3 o'clock on CBS at BB&T Stadium in beautiful Baltimore, Maryland, as it will be Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, led, coached by John Harbaugh, against Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, the Bimbo in the booth, and the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Baltimore is favored by 4 in this game. This is a tough game for Kansas City. Kansas City is going to be an interesting ride to see how they're going to perform this week, especially in this more hostile environment. And, you know, Lamar being the running quarterback that he is, I expect him to have some big games in this game. I expect a lot of passing in his realm. But to me, you know, it's going to be difficult with Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has the tools as well too. They're the defending champions. You know, they always seem to find a way. But I think it's done. I want it to be done. I want this Chiefs reign to end. I would like to see Baltimore get into the championship. I'm taking Baltimore in the money line straight up. The over-under in this game for Sunday afternoon's 3 o'clock kickoff, it's the over-under on that is 44.5. I will totally smash that over. I think they get to 48 between the two teams. I think 21 points and touchdowns between the two teams, and then a couple field goals will get you to that over total at 44.5. This is according to ESPN Bets, formerly of the Barstool Sportsbook. But the Baltimore Ravens are favored by 4 points in this game. So if you give it 3 points, it's really a touchdown game for them. So it'll be interesting. If you look at how the matchup projection is, you know, Lamar Jackson, 457 for 3,678 yards. He has 24 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, while Patrick Mahomes this season is 401 of 597 for 4,183 yards, 27 touchdowns, 14 interceptions this year. And Lamar also leads in the rushing realm. He has 148 carries for 821 yards. He only has 5 touchdowns this year. But Zach Flowers is going to be a key piece to this receiving core for the Baltimore Ravens. 77 catches for 856 yards, 5 TDs. And of course, Travis Kelce on the side is going to be there for Mahomes. He has 93 receptions for 984 yards and 5 touchdowns. He hasn't gotten to the 1,000-yard mark this season, which is surprising. Pacheco, the running back, 205 carries for 935 yards, 7 TDs this season for the Chiefs. The projection looks like it is in favor, and the money is in favor to the Baltimore Ravens in this game. I am taking Baltimore in the money line, and I will take the over in that game. I think that they will get the job done, and I think Baltimore gets the win and will head to Vegas in the game. Some notable injuries, of course, Taylor Wallace is questionable. Malcolm Humphrey is questionable for Baltimore, of course. For the Chiefs, Pacheco is questionable. Willie Gay is also a linebacker, is questionable in this game as well too, so we'll see how that shakes out. By the way, game time temperature 49 degrees. It will be cloudy. It won't be misty and rainy. It will be a comfortable afternoon for football, perfect football weather in the middle of January. So we'll see how that shakes out. And like I said, I will take Baltimore in the money line and the over in the game, which is at 44.5, which then sets up the big game, which will be at 6:30 on Fox, as it will be Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey and the San Francisco 49ers hosting Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Montgomery, and Dan Campbell, and the Detroit Lions. Now, the Lions, a huge underdog in this game. San Francisco is favored by 7 in this game. The over-under in this game, looking at it right now, is set at 51.5. I don't think it gets to 51 between the two teams. I think it's going to be like a 27-21 kind of game, like last week with Green Bay and San Francisco. 69 degrees and sunny. It'll be a nice afternoon for nice early evening game out in Santa Clara. If you look at it for the Lions this year, the overall season leaders, Goff is 407 of 605 for 4,575 yards. He has 30 touchdowns and 20 interceptions, while Brock Purdy is 308 for 444 attempts at 4,280 total yards this season. He has 31 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. David Montgomery, 219 carries for 1,015 yards, 13 touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey, 272 yards, 149 on the ground, 14 touchdowns this year. Amon-Ra St. Brown is the leading receiver for the Lions at 119 receptions for 1,515 yards, 10 TDs. Beluk is the leading receiving yard player for San Francisco. He has 75 receptions for 1,342 yards for 7 TDs. It's going to be an interesting, I think the receiving core would now, with finding out that Deebo Samuel is expected, he's questionable right now. I think he will be ruled out for this game. If he is ruled out for this game, it opens up the run game for Detroit that they need to shut down and control. And Montgomery can capitalize on it. By the way, if you were looking at stat-wise for both teams, let me pull it up really quickly for you guys. I don't have it available right now, unfortunately, but it looks to me that this is going to be interesting, how this game sets up. Like I said, San Francisco favored by 7, 51.5 is the over-under on this game. As a Lions fan and as a longtime Lions fan, I'm hoping that we get to the Super Bowl. I'm expecting us to do well in this game. Do I see us honestly winning it? I think this is where the letdown could happen. Like I said, I think it being a 28-21 game looks like what it's going to shape out to be. Maybe a 27-24 game. Field goals at the end of the game could cost us. For me, I'm going to have to go and ride with it. I'm going to take San Francisco and the money line straight, and I will take the under in this game at 51.5. I do have faith that the Lions can get the job done and can win this football game, but a lot of me is thinking, I'm thinking with my head, and I'm not thinking with my heart this time. I'm thinking with my head. I'm looking at the board. If they win against San Francisco, you know, it's great, and it's great to see that Detroit will make the run and make the play and play for Lombardi. But I'm looking at it as a not just as a gambler, but also as a down the middle fan here. I'm a Lions fan. I love Goff. I love the Lions. I'm a big Lions supporter. But I'm just gonna shoot you straight here. This could be where the spot where the SOL Lions could be. This could be where the LOL Lions could be as well too. Because remember, Goff has had a huge few games. The Minnesota game. At Christmas Eve was great. The game against the Broncos, great. The final game against Minnesota was good. The LA game, he was clean. He looked good. The Tampa Bay game looked clean, looked good. The problem I have is, when is the bottom going to drop? When is it going to fall? Because he's due for a bad game, and I'm hoping it's either he plays a good game and it's not as best and they win, but my fear is that he plays a bad game against San Francisco out in San Francisco and loses it for the Lions. Because if they win this game, the hype and the talk is going to be huge for the Lions. It's going to be absolutely huge. They're going to get big, swelled heads over this. And, you know, I don't want to see that happen. I don't want to see that happen. I want us to be good enough to play for Lombardi. And if you follow the you know, the conspiracy theory of who is playing for the Super Bowl this year with the color scheme, with the being purple and red, you would think, it's my prediction, Baltimore and San Francisco, who I picked at the beginning of this season in the NFL preview show. I predicted it right here. I told you guys it was going to be Baltimore and San Francisco, and we're on the verge of it happening. And I will stick with it. I still think Baltimore still wins the Lombardi Trophy this year. I think Baltimore gets the job done. They did all the best that they could. I think that's what happens. If the Lions win against San Francisco and it's against Baltimore, you know, it's a crapshoot. I think it's more of a walk for Baltimore. If Kansas City wins this game against Baltimore and it's Detroit and Kansas City, it's just a repeat basically of week one back in Arrowhead all over again, because this game is being played out in Vegas. And the Kansas City fan will travel for that game. Same with the Lion fan. They will travel out. They will travel. You'll see a lot of Lions fans in Santa Clara. That ticket is very, very expensive right now. If you look at right now on the market, the lowest ticket right now runs at $378. It's a lot cheaper than it was last week in Detroit when they were playing Tampa Bay. But at the same time, it's going to be interesting. The injuries to watch out for the Lions, by the way, Alex Amazoni is questionable. Sam Laporta is questionable, but I think he's going to play too. Josh Reynolds will probably play. Debo, like I said, is questionable right now. I don't think he will play, especially with that big shoulder injury. But we'll see what happens. So, again, I have Baltimore in the money line and the over in the game against Kansas City. And then I will take San Francisco money line and the under in the San Francisco-Detroit game. Parlay that out for you here really quickly. If you're looking to make a bet on that on the ESPN Bets app, I just really want to quickly put it together for you guys right here. If you parlay that bet, parlay it with the over and the under, dollar wager. Here, let's see here. Log in really quickly here for you guys. As we're on All Andy Alford, we're going to be making the wager for the conference championship game here. If you wager it out on the ESPN Bets, which we use, which is used through the Hollywood Casino app. Let's see here. Your parlay plus is a plus 538. So if you take San Francisco in the money line and the under at 51.5, and you take Baltimore's money line and the over at 44.5 between Kansas City and Baltimore, you're a plus 538. So the dollar bet would win you 538. If you're making a $5 wager on that game, it makes it, you could win $26.91. A $10 wager wins you $63.83. And then if you're really a gambler and you're going to go hurdle money on it, it's going to be $500. You win $638.25 on your $100 bet with that. So don't forget to go bet, and please gamble responsibly on the ESPN Bet. Gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit responsiblegambling.org for all the information. And all the lines that we provide are through the ESPN Bets app. So there's that. I'm up in the red right now. I'm up in the black right now. Not in the red. I'm in the black. Up from my original $20. I'm up $136. I will take that any day of the week. So there's that for you. And that is the rest of the NFL. We won't talk NFL now until after the conference championship game. We'll see how it all shakes out. And again, I have Baltimore and the over of that game at 44.5. And I have San Francisco and the under at 51.5 in the game on Sunday. So enjoy the games. Enjoy it. Have fun as you are watching and listening to All Andy Alford tonight right here on the All Andy Alford Network, whether it be on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you're listening, wherever and whenever you're listening. Thank you so much for tuning into the show tonight. And now let's hit the ice. Let's talk a big weekend in in hockey, of course, but we're going to start with what happened Tuesday night at Rexall, formerly Rexall Place. Now it's the new Rogers Place, where the Jackets, and again, seem to find a way, and they're killing me. They're killing me. So talk a little Jackets hockey. Of course, the Jackets coming off of a loss this past Tuesday night in Edmonton, as they are on this three-week road trip that will see them through the All-Star break, not coming back to Nationwide till February 10th, but they were in Edmonton on Tuesday night taking on the Edmonton Oilers, and the Jackets played pretty decent. You know, it was Edmonton jumping out to the early 1-0 lead from Fogle, from Kane and Nurse on the power play, making it 1-0 at the 7:30 mark of the first period. And then he had Dmitry Volkhov getting his 10th of the season from Kent Johnson, tying the game at 1-1 at the 15:25 mark of the first period. It stayed that way after 20 minutes and then again after 40 minutes of play. But then the Oilers really took off. Vander Kane getting his 15th of the season for Fogle, and Nugent Hopkins even strength at the 4:53 mark of the period. And not even just a few minutes later, Connor McDavid then capitalizes, getting his 17th of the season from Leon Draisaitl and Cody Ceci, and it's 3-1 Oilers. And then the dagger of the kill it all was Dylan Holloway getting a second of the season from Brown and Kulak, making it a 4-1 game. That was the final at Rogers Place. The start of the road trip was the toughest one for the Jackets, as they fall 4-1 to the Edmonton Oilers. The Jackets outshot the Oilers in the game 27-24. The Oilers led in the faceoff dot 51% to 49%. The Oilers 50% on the faceoff dot. Columbus 0-4 on the power play, 50% of the power play. They were 1-2 on the power play, while Toledo, Columbus was 0-4. They did not record a power play goal at all. Edmonton had 10 minutes in penalties. Columbus had 6 minutes in penalties. Columbus did out-hit the Oilers in the game 25-24. The Oilers had a 16-15 shot block ratio in the game. Of course, it was Elvis versus Lincolns for the Jackets. He stopped a total of 20 of 24, save percentage of .833 for the Oilers in the game. It was their starting goaltender, Skinner, who stopped 26 of 27, save percentage of .963. So the Jackets fall to the Oilers in game one of this 2-week road trip by the score of 4-1. They will get back on the ice tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop in Ben Grom's Saddle Dome. The Saddle Dome itself, Scotiabank Saddle Dome, at 9 o'clock against the Calgary Flames. They'll have a day off, and then they'll travel to Vancouver to Rogers Center to take on the Vancouver Canucks. A huge game for the Jackets in that realm, as Vancouver is the best team in the National Hockey League, and, you know, it just doesn't get any easier. Vancouver is the number one team, Edmonton the number two team, and Calgary is in the wild card hunt right now, so they are there. And then after the Vancouver game, they come back to the States for a game on Sunday night against the Seattle Kraken. 9 o'clock puck drop for that one, and then they head to St. Louis on Tuesday, and then the All-Star break happens, and thank God the All-Star break happens. But the problem after that is that the Jackets will return home on the 10th of February to play Tampa, but then they go immediately back on the road. And it's tough for the Jackets. They'll go to Ottawa on the 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. Then they'll head to San Jose on the 17th, the 20th against the Kings, and the 21st against the Ducks before returning back to Nationwide on the 23rd to take on the Buffalo Sabres. It is a tough schedule. It is very, very tough for this Jacket team. You know, and they'll have the long break, of course, for the All-Star break, almost a full week of no hockey, almost a week, full week of no hockey. But the problem is, you know, especially with this young team, you expect this team to get better and better, and it has not gotten better. I mean, you look at the stats for this Jacket team this year. I mean, it's point-wise is Gaudreau with 29 points. Fantelli is tied with Werenski at 25 points. Kirill Marchenko is at 24 points right now. Dmitry Volkhov is 23 points. The leader in the clubhouse of goals is Marchenko at 14. Jenner's at 13. Fantelli and Chinnikov are both at 11. And Volkhov is at 10. Now you look at it, the plus minus, Marchenko's a plus 7. Volkov is at plus 5. Kent Johnson's a plus 2. Werenski's a plus 2. And then Jake Christensen is a plus 1. And you look at all of it. Now we're going to look at everybody on the team. Everybody's stat, the plus minus. You look at it. I don't have it pulled up. I apologize. But those are the top guys. After we get to after Christensen, everybody's in the net, even or negative. That's not good. Especially how bad this team is this year. It doesn't look good. And we're getting closer and closer to the trade deadline, and I'm worried about, you know, this team being sold off, especially young talent. And that's what everybody's looking for, is young skaters, young talent, young players. I just don't see it. You know, I see it happening with the Jackets and how bad they are performing. I really do, and it scares me. It honestly scares me. It does. Patrick Waugh is going to return tonight to Montreal to coach the New York Islanders. My apologies. That's huge right there. Looks like Nick Bonino has been placed on waivers by the New York Rangers. The forward has 5 points in 45 games, skating with New York for the first time since injury. He was placed on waivers. He has a 1-year contract worth $800,000. He's going to be gone. I think somebody will pick him up. And so, yeah, there's that. Games happening besides the Jackets tonight, taking on the Flames. Detroit is at home against the Flyers. As a 7 o'clock puck drop at the Slice. You have the Islanders are in Montreal to battle the Canadiens. Bruins are in Ottawa to battle the Senators. Coyotes are in Tampa to battle the Lightning. New Jersey is in Carolina to battle the Hurricanes. Dallas is hosting the Anaheim Ducks. Nashville is in Minnesota to battle the Wild. And the Oilers are at home to take on the Chicago Blackhawks. And the Oilers will continue. They're on the 14-game winning streak. They're going to try to get to 15 tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks. And looking at the standings going into today's play, this is what it looks like in regarding of the National Hockey League. We'll start with the Metropolitan Division. The Rangers are in the top spot at 29-15-3 with 61 points. Carolina is at 26-15-5 with 57 points. Philadelphia 25-17-6 with 56 points. Those are the top three teams. On the outside, looking into the top three teams are the New Jersey Devils at 24-18-3 with 51 points. The Islanders are 20-16-11 at 51 points. Washington 22-18-5 with 50 points. Pittsburgh is 21-17-6 with 48 points. And our Jackets, that's dead last in the Metropolitan Division at 14-23-9 with 37 points. In the Atlantic Division is the Boston Bruins in the top spot at 29-9-9 with 67 points. Florida is 29-14-4 with 62 points. Toronto 24-14-8 with 56 points. Those are the top three teams in the Atlantic Division. On the outside looking in are the Tampa Bay Lightning at 25-18-5 at 55 points. Detroit is in fifth at 24-18-5 with 53 points. Buffalo 21-23-4 46 points. Montreal is 19-21-7 with 45 points. And the Ottawa Senators are 18-24-1 with 37 points. In the Western Conference, the top team in the Central Division are the Winnipeg Jets at 30-11-5 with 65 points. They are tied with points with the Colorado Avalanche, who are 31-14-3 with 65 points. Dallas is in third. They're 28-13-6 with 62 points. Nashville is in fourth at 25-21-1 with 51 points. St. Louis 24-20-2 with 50 points. The Arizona Coyotes are 23-20-3 with 49 points. Yeah, the Minnesota Wild is at 500 at 21-21-5 with 47 points, and the Chicago Blackhawks are 14-32-2 with 30 points. Pacific Division looks like this. Vancouver 32-11-5 or 69 points, top team in the league. That's who the Jackets will face on Saturday at Rogers Center. Vegas is in second at 28-14-6 with 62 points. Edmonton, who the Jackets just lost to on Tuesday, who are going to play Chicago tonight, are 27-15-1 with 55 points. The Kings are 22-14-9 with 53 points on the outside looking in. Seattle 20-18-9 with 49 points. Calgary, who the Jackets will play tonight, they are 21-21-5 with 47 points. They're still in the hunt. They're still mathematically in it to get in it. Anaheim 16-30-1 with 33 points, and the San Jose Sharks are 13-31-4 with 30 points. And like I said, the worst team, San Jose, but the Jackets are 29th in the National Hockey League with 37 points. So that's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. So we'll see what happens. If you're wondering, there'll be 14 games on Saturday. Bruins and Flyers is a key one. Another key one on Saturday, Hockey Night Canada will have Montreal and Pittsburgh, and then Toronto in Winnipeg. That's a game right there to watch us. Well, Vegas travels to Detroit to take on the Golden Knights on Saturday. That's an 8 o'clock puck drop for that one. Circle that for you for a late night start for that one. And then Friday, and by the way, Vegas will be coming back. It's a back-to-back for Vegas because they'll go to from New York, who they'll play Friday on national television, to Detroit on Saturday night. So that's a tough test for Vegas right there. Absolutely tough test. So we shall see Jackets tonight. Like I said, 9 o'clock puck drop. Games last night, Florida beats up on the Coyotes 6-2 in overtime. It was the Leafs, a 1-0 winner over the Winnipeg Jets. Carolina 3-2 win over the Boston Bruins. Capitals fall to the Avalanche 6-2, and the Kraken a 6-2 win over Chicago. In overtime, it was the Blues beating the Vancouver Canucks 3-2, and the Sabres a 5-3 win over the LA Kings. So there's your wrap-up round for the National Hockey League. And like I mentioned before, the Jackets tonight will take on the Calgary Flames. 9 o'clock puck drop in that affair as you're watching and listening to All Andy Alford tonight right here on the All Andy Alford Network, whether it be on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you're listening, wherever and whenever you're listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, the big story, of course, this weekend is continuing the hockey talk. We're going to talk a little bit about the Walleye, of course, or as this weekend they will be known as the Toledo Storm, as Toledo Hockey Hall of Fame will be inducting new members into the Hockey Hall of Fame this upcoming weekend, as they will honor the 92-93, 93-94 Toledo Storm hockey team, the last championship in professional hockey in the city of Toledo. That will happen this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. But, of course, they got games in front of them. Of course, they will be playing. Fish are in Cincinnati on Friday night to take on the Cyclones, 7:30 puck drop in Cincinnati for that one. So they'll be at Heritage Bank, and then they will come back to the Huntington Center to play Kalamazoo tomorrow on Saturday night at 7:15 puck drop there at the Huntington Center at the Bank Tank. So tickets are sold out for that game. So if you were looking for tickets for that, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. Sunday, they will be back at home, 5:15 puck drop. I will be in attendance for that game as we will honor the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony that will take place. That's actually going to take place Friday night. Still looking for somebody if they have it. If they have tickets for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, I would love to go. Absolutely love to go. They're having it set Friday night. But the Fish will be playing Cincinnati on Sunday, 5:15 puck drop for that affair. If you're looking around the East Coast League, Sunday, Indianapolis is taking on Kalamazoo. You also have those. That's the only other division game of importance. Saturday, it will be of divisional opponents. Iowa is in Indianapolis. Wheeling is in Reading. Like I said, Toledo is hosting Kalamazoo. Fort Wayne is in Cincinnati for their affair. And then, like I said, Friday, Toledo is in Cincinnati for the game against the Cyclones. Iowa is in Indianapolis. Fort Wayne is in Kalamazoo. And Wheeling is in Reading for that big series. By the way, Savannah is hosting Jacksonville. And by the way, congratulations are in order to the new franchise that's going to be in Bloomington, Illinois. They announced the team yesterday. It's going to be called the Bloomington Bison. The color scheme is going to be like a teal blue, white, and red, which represents the Chicago flag. It's going to be another team out of the Chicago suburbs. I'm really looking forward to seeing what this team looks like and where they're going to be playing and what division. I feel like they're going to be playing in our division this upcoming season. So it's going to be interesting for the 24-25 campaign of how many times we're going to see this new Bloomington Bison team come to the Huntington Center, as well as hoping we get like Savannah and Orlando and Florida and Jacksonville and some of these other big name small southern teams, as well as some of the northern teams like the Tree Rivers, as well as, you know, Reading and more Norfolk, more of those teams to come into the or Adirondack, or more of those teams to come into the building, because you know, it gets kind of stale to see the same teams over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. How many times can you... I know Cincinnati's in our division, but how many times can you play Cincinnati? How many times can you play Kalamazoo? I wish the league would look into, you know, sizing down the divisional opponents so that we have more... Because when you go towards the Kelly Cup playoff, you're going to be playing the Eastern Conference opponents. So why not incorporate them more and more into the schedule? I mean, if you could, if Fort Wayne can get Worcester, Massachusetts to come to Fort Wayne for a 3-game series, why can't Toledo get them for a 2-gamer? Or better yet, why can't they get Adirondack to come to town? Or why can't they get Orlando to come to town? It's just a question I have. I've had this question for the longest period of time. I wish that they would, you know, would consider who I would love to see Savannah come to town. Savannah would be awesome. Those jerseys are awesome. They came to Fort Wayne last year, but they didn't come to Toledo. They went to Cincinnati. They didn't come to Toledo. We got Greenville. We don't want that. We do not want that. So looking at the standings going into this weekend's play, it will look like this. By the way, one game tonight, it will be Savannah playing Orlando in Savannah. 7 o'clock puck drop for that one. But in the North Division, we'll start first and foremost with the Central Division, where the Walleye are at. The Walleye are sitting in the top spot with 37 games played. They have 3 games in hand to Fort Wayne. Toledo is 24-8-2-3 with 53 points. Fort Wayne is 20-16-1-3 with 44 points. Indy is in third at 19-14-4-0 with 42 points. And Wheeling is 19-16-1-1 with 40 points. Cincinnati on the outside looking into the playoff picture right now are 18-16-4-0 with 40 points. Kalamazoo 18-16-2-0 with 38 points, and the Iowa Heartlanders are 15-18-5-1 with 36 points. This is all in the Western Conference opponents and into the Western Conference more. The Mountain Division shows it's the Kansas City Mavericks in the top spot at 28-7-2-0 with 58 points. The Idaho Steelheads are 25-11-1-1 with 52 points. Tulsa Oilers are 18-16-3-0 with 39 points. The Rapid City Rush are 17-22-0 with 36 points. Allen is 17-21-1-1 with 35 points. The Utah Grizzlies are 16-22-0-0 with 32 points. And the Wichita Thunder are 12-25-0 with 29 points. If you look at the division in the Eastern Conference, in the North Division, led by the Adirondack Thunder, who are 27-8-2 with N1 with 57 points. Norfolk 19-16-3-1 with 42 points. Newfoundland is 17-16-7-0 with 41 points. The Worcester Railers 17-16-3-2 with 39 points. Tree Rivers Lions are 17-19-2-2 with 38 points. Reading is 16-17-3-1 with 36 points. And the Maine Mariners are 15-16-5-0 with 35 points. South Division looks like this. Greenville's on the top spot at 28-11-1-0 with 57 points. Orlando 20-11-3-2 with 45 points. Jacksonville is 21-15-3-0 with 45 points. The Florida Everblades are 20-11-5-0 with 45 points. South Carolina is 21-14-2-0 with 44 points. It is the Savannah Ghost Pirates at 13-24-1 with 31 points. And the Atlanta Gladiators are 14-23-2-0 with 30 points. The worst team in the East Coast Hockey League is the Wichita Thunder, who are 12-25-0 with 29 points. So there is all the news and notes. By the way, got to make mention of the ECHL announced some fines and suspensions. The Department of Safety announced that Kansas City player Justin Nukbar has been suspended for one game and is fined an undisclosed amount of money for his actions. He was fined under Rule 28, supplementary discipline, as a result of a game misconduct for aggressor at the 13-18 mark of the third period. He will miss the game against Allen on the 26th. So there's that. And like I said, that's the only game happening tonight. And by the way, league leaders looks like this. Hawkins leads the league in points at 49 points. Peter Bates is in second with Wade Murphy and Patrick Curry, as well as Zach Andrusiak, all at 44 points. Leading goal scorer right now is Alex Kine out of Maine, who has 22. Mark Russell for Idaho has 22. Patrick Rosso from Adirondack has got 21. Hawkins has got 20. And Peter Bates is... got 20 goals. Leading in assists is Jalen Smerick from Cincinnati. 36 assists this year. Jack Dugan with 31. Max Keeve with 31. Tommy Holchek at 30. And Cameron Hillis is at 30 as well. So there is that. All the league leaders, all the stats, all the information you wanted to know about the East Coast Hockey League. But, of course, like I mentioned before, the big news, of course, is that the Walleye are going to be honoring the 1992-93, 93-94 Toledo Storm hockey team, the last championship that took place in the city of Toledo. And they will be honoring the Storm this weekend. And a big tribute for the Storm weekend, of course, as they will honor the 30th anniversary. They will honor the back-to-back Rally Cup champions before the game on Saturday, with the puck drop being at 7:30, not 7:15. It'll be a 7:30 puck drop, by the way, for that one on Saturday. Sunday's game, 5:15, they will induct the Hall of Fame. Of course, they're going to be wearing the Storm jerseys this upcoming weekend. You can get a they'll do bidding game-worn jerseys on Sunday night. For the first 1,500 fans on Saturday and the first 1,500 fans on Sunday, Storm, they will be giving away Storm Championship banner replicas. So get there early. I know a lot of you people get there early, like at like 11 a.m., 10 a.m., just for a banner at 5 o'clock. It's not really truly worth it. I mean, you know, I got one there and I got my Turner Cup one over there, but still. But the big one for me is the Hockey Hall of Fame meet and greet. You'll have a chance to meet these players on Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, they'll be alumni will sign during the intermission on Sunday. They will sign on Sunday as well, too, in the aquarium. Players to attend the weekend for Saturday and Sunday will be Alex Hicks, Rick Judson, Mark Deasley, Bruce McDonald, Derek Booth, Ian Duncan, as well as Claude Noel and Jeff Lurg. On Saturday, it'll be all those players, and also Dave Flanagan, Dave Guerin, Norm Dazile, Pat Pilipiuk, Chris McSorley, Rick Corvo, Nick Vitucci, and Andy Suey will be there only on Saturday. They're also going to be doing a puck mystery where you can get a puck. The package is for the first 400 people, so get yours before they sell out. You can get a puck signed by either Lurg or Ian Duncan, or even Mark Deasley, too. And by the way, Sunday is the open skate as well for that. The doors will open at 4. Puck drop is at 5:15 on Sunday. And like I said, the doors will open for Saturday's game at 5:30, and the puck drop will be at 7:30 for that game on Saturday. And like I mentioned before, Friday night will be the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. They'll have it's probably one of my favorite events of the season to go to and to see. It will only be available on the BCSN app. I wanted to pull it up really quickly. You'll be able to watch on the BCSN app on Friday night. And then after the Storm weekend, of course, they're going to have Friday. They'll be home for a big three-game series against Norfolk starting Friday night, which will be Star Wars night. Saturday, they'll have it'll be a regular night against Norfolk, and Sunday is Pucks and Paws as well as Faith and Family. And you can get all your tickets for this Sunday's game and next weekend series against Norfolk by going to 419-725-WALL or ToledoWalleye.com, or head down to the Huntington Center box office. I recommend the Huntington Center box office so you don't get charged the fees. So there is that. And like I said, Friday is the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. The only way you can access it, if you're a season ticket holder or you're offered the ticket, or you can watch it on the BCSN app. So there is that for you. So that is the recap of everything on the ice. And you're listening to All Andy Elford tonight right here on the All Andy Elford Network, whether it be on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you're listening, wherever and whenever you're listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we're going to talk some more hockey right now. We're going to relive some more Storm memories, of course. With it being the anniversary of the 30th year of Toledo hockey history, of course, you can go back onto some of the pages and, you know, on the Walleye page and see some of the video of the championship ceremonies and everything like that, and them winning it in Raleigh, which was the last championship in the city of Toledo, and the parade that they had in 92, 93, and then 93 and 94. That was awesome. Like I said, I was there for the 94 parade. I remember it when I was a kid, the Zamboni breaking down as it was trying to get it over the go onto the parade. They got it to the parade route and started going down Summit Street, and it broke down, and they had to tow it the rest of the way. It was a rainy afternoon for that parade. I just remember that very, very vividly, and some of the Storm memories I shared with you guys on Tuesday. You can go back onto our page on the Facebook Live show, as well as on our different platforms that you can listen to it, and you can hear some of the stories. But I was remembering a few other stories from the Storm days. Like I said, you know, the memories of that building was absolutely, you know, awesome. There's a few people in my life that, you know, are still in my life that I remember going to tons of games. Of course, Steve Pepperocki, who is an avid sports collector and a big BG hockey fan. He was a big contributor to the Storm, as well as in all of Toledo hockey, except for the Walleye, of course. Marty Guthrie, of course, he had season tickets right where my parents were at back in the day. My friend Joe Hatfield, he was one of those that took me to a lot of games when I was a kid, because my dad would work third shift, so, you know, he couldn't go to a lot of the hockey games, so Joe would offer to go to the hockey game with me, and, you know, and he and I run into each other a lot when we're at Walleye games, as well as, you know, have dinner, because we're all members of the family. He's a member of my family, and he meant a lot to me regarding of that. There's a few memories, some good memories and some bad memories. Of course, them being eliminated from the American Conference Championship against Atlanta, that was a bad memory. The final game I witnessed in that building, that was a sad day. Like I said, a lot of the good memories were, you know, when I was a kid and when I was in my teens going to the sports arena. I took dates to the hockey games. I took friends and relatives to One Main Street. It was fantastic. It would absolutely was the best time of my life in that building. And one of my memories I remember is that they used to play games sometimes on Sundays and Sunday afternoons. But I think one of my favorite memories, I would say probably about 3 or 4 years before they closed, they brought back and honored the original the original Gold Digger team that won, and it was every player that they had that won the Turner Cup Championship, including, you know, Paul Tantardini that was still alive at the time, a lot of them that were still alive, and they played the Detroit Red Wing alumni team, and it was so sold out. It was a Saturday afternoon game. And they tried to book it as a doubleheader. You can go see the Storm, and they were playing Reading, but before that was the Detroit alumni game against the Toledo Gold Digger alumni team, and that was so cool to see. You know, these my hockey heroes back in the day. There, you know, I saw a Paul Coffey and a few of the other players. I saw that bum Mickey Redman, on the ice. But seeing the Toledo hockey legends on the ice was absolutely amazing. Unfortunately, I didn't stay for the Storm game because it was a really good humdinger of a game. But I remember that. Whenever you walked into the building and you would walk in, and the ticket office was immediately right to the right as soon as you walk in. It'd be the big glass window, and they would have the tickets. The ticket office was there, and they showed you the ticket, the seat. You could see the whole stadium, like on the backside, and they showed you where your seat is going to be located at, which is probably one of my favorite memories too. And then when you would walk in to the sports arena, you would go through the ticket taker. The ticket taker would take it, and right in front of you would be these red columns. And they would be selling the programs. And you get the Storm insert tracker, and they show you all the stats and all the players that are going to be playing. And you would do the checking off of scratches for the night. And that was awesome to see. And that was also right next to the stand that had the best nachos and the best cherry Coke that you ever had in the sports arena. And then you would walk immediately to the right, and you would walk, and there would be the cotton candy and the snow cone machine, and they had like the little small bar area, and then you make the turn, and you would see the big sections, open sections where they would have like with the garage doors next to them. So that's where they would load in for like circuses and concerts and stuff like that. That's where they put the semi trucks and everything like that. And that would take you into the back where the Zamboni was at, and that's where we would usually sit at. And then you would go up the stairs and the red seats when I was there, when I was a kid. That's what I grew up with, red seats. Of course, when they were there, when the building was built, you know, they had different color seats for different color sections. So everybody went to red seats. It was awesome to see. And, you know, and then when they had the lower section, I just remember seeing, you know, like along the sides, the glass was about, when you stood up in your chair, you were, your face was right face level to the ice surface. So you were watching the players warm up, and there would be a lot of pucks that would come off the goal mouth or off something, and it would come into the crowd. So there was a lot of pucks that would be flying. I remember before they put the netting up on the back end, I got drilled with a puck on my hip area. It came up and hit me on the side. I still have that Storm puck. It's out in my out of my dresser. So hold on a second. I'm actually going to grab it for you here on Facebook Live. So if you're watching us on Facebook Live, I have in my hand a puck, a couple pucks in my hand. And this one right here, is signed by the 1992-1993 Toledo Storm Hockey Championship team. The reason why I say that, because that's the original logo from the 92-93 Riley Cup Championships. And then in the 2000s, when the NHL was going to new pucks, of course, this is the puck, and I don't know if you can see, it's probably backwards on the page here, but that's the original puck. It's the Storm puck. Back side has the official game puck. This is the puck that drilled me in the hip, and I will always treasure this puck because it's probably one of the last pucks I ever got in the sports arena. But my friend Gary Walsh gave me this puck. He found it was from the 92-93 championship team. And a lot of numbers, a lot of names, 19, 13. Let's see here. I can't picture any of them out here, but it was it was cool to have that. And they signed it with a pen, and there's the old championship logo to it. So we're honoring this 92-93 team, and we're honoring the 93-94 team. So, you know, I hope that, you know, the Walleye will do like pucks with the logo and everything like that for that championship run, because that would be cool to have. And you gotta admit, that logo is so cool. The hockey stick and the lightning bolt on it, and how the writing of Storm is written out, it's absolutely cool. Let's see. And so we're honoring the Storm this weekend. Looking forward to it. And, you know, it's a piece of Toledo hockey history. And that's the key thing. We got to keep this history going. It can't be put on the back burner. So another memory I wanted to share was a Sunday afternoon game. And my dad and I were at the game, and all of a sudden we saw some smoke coming from the Storm tunnel. Like, where they come up. I remember they used to go up the stairs and then down the stairs and onto the ice surface. And my dad and I saw the smoke pouring out, and we're like, what is the smoke coming out? You know, we were thinking it's on, something was on fire. Sure enough, the popcorn machine underneath where the storm was at was on fire. There was a lot of smoke. They had the players come. All the players came onto the ice. They got the fire taken out. They asked everybody to go back to their seats. And, you know, it was a burnt smell of the popcorn, and it still smelled like it to that day. So they knocked the building down. But yeah, like I said, I remember the Riverdome Lounge. That was awesome. That was some of the best fries there. But like I said, the best food from when I was a kid at the sports arena had to have been the nachos that were right as soon as you walked in the door. I don't remember the lady's name off the top of my head, but it was that stand, and the stand on the other side was the only two stands in the whole arena that sold Cherry Coke, and that's the only soda I would drink. So maybe I'll have to smuggle in a Cherry Coke on Sunday afternoon to watch the Toledo Walleye / Storm on the ice. So, and they used to have that jingle. If you remember, the jingle. You know, Toledo Storm hockey taking Toledo by storm. Yeah. And then the cool thing was the officials would come on the ice. You know, they were skating and everything like that. And at the end of the period, the officials would go off the ice, and two Toledo police officers would walk across the ice with the officials. And that was so cool to see that, because it would be like, you knew that the officials, you know, they were just having security and protection. So that was cool to see. And the scoreboards. If you remember the scoreboards on the backside, they had like Jose Cuervo on one side and like Labatt Blue on the other side. And it was a Coke symbol on the front, and it was all done with like with lights and everything like that. That was awesome. I wish they would, you know, do something like that on the ribbon board, like the old color scheme for this upcoming weekend. But, you know, that's not probably going to happen. So, but hey, they brought an organist for the Gold Digger Nights a few years ago. So why not? Why not? So again, we're honoring the 92-93 and the 93-94 Toledo Storm team this weekend at the Huntington Center as the Fish take on Kalamazoo Friday night and Cincinnati on Saturday night. As you are watching and listening to All Andy Alford tonight right here on the All Andy Alford Network, whether it be on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you're listening, wherever and whenever you're listening, thank you so much for tuning into the show. And now let's talk some other sports. Let's take a look at the leaderboard right now for the LPGA Drive-On Championship, as well as a preview of the Royal Rumble and the Battle of I-75 between our Bowling Green State University Falcon men's basketball team and the University of Toledo men's basketball team. Now let's talk a little more on sports-wise, and let's preview the rest of the weekend that's ahead, of course. And let's also take a look at what's happening on the leaderboard when it comes to the Drive-On Championship for the LPGA. Okay. Just been given this note. Zach Werenski from the Blue Jackets has been activated off the IR. He will start tonight against the Calgary Flames. So Zach Werenski back in the lineup tonight in Calgary against the Flames. So looking forward to that. So again, let's get to the hard court really quick. The Battle of I-75 will commence on Saturday, 2 o'clock at Savage Arena, as it will be our Falcons, who are 14-5 overall, will take on the University of Toledo Rockets, who are 12-7. If you're looking at the stats right now, Marcus Hill from Bowling Green, the guard, has 20 points per game. He averages 74% from the free throw stripes. He's 44% from field goal range. The leading rebounder for BG is Rashawn Aggie, who's got 9.2 rebounds per game. For the Rockets, it's Tyler Cochran, who's got 6.5 rebounds per game. Their leading point getter is Raheem Moss, who's got 16 points per game. He's 76.5% from the free throw stripes. He's 46.9% from the field goal area. Assist is Marcus Hill, who he averages 2.3 a game, and Raheem Moss averages 2.3 a game. If you're looking at it, Bowling Green averages 76.8 points per game. Toledo, 78.7 points per game, while giving up 73.6. That's what Toledo gives up. Bowling Green averages 70.8. They give up from the field goal stripe. BG is 44.3% to Toledo's 46.8%. They average about 39.1 rebounds a game, Bowling Green does, while Toledo averages 33.4 blocks per game. Toledo's got 2.4, BG's got 2.8. Steals per game is in the favor of the Rockets at 7.3 to the Falcons 6.3. For the BG, the last five games, they won against Ohio on the 9th of January. They were on a seven-game winning streak until they lost the other night on the 23rd to Kent State in overtime, 90-84. For the Rockets, they have been up and down. They had a three-game winning streak with wins against Kent State, Ball State, and Buffalo before a loss to Central Michigan, and they just came off the win over NIU this past week, 89-73, so that'll be interesting. And so, like I said, Toledo and the Falcons back on the hard court. 2 o'clock tip, that game on ESPN Plus. You can get tickets at Savage Arena for that game. If you're wondering when these two teams will play again, will be in Bowling Green. That game will be in February. That will be on the 24th, Saturday, for a 2 p.m. tip-off for that as well. And after this game for BG, BG will then travel to Ball State and then return back to the Stroh Center on February 3rd for a 5 p.m. tip against Central Michigan in that realm. Toledo, for them, after the game against Bowling Green, they will then stay at home against Western Michigan next Tuesday before heading to Akron for a big matchup against the Zips on the 2nd of February, a 9 p.m. tip-off for that one as well. So there's that. Also, got to make mention of this as well. The second LPGA event is happening as we speak in Brighton, Florida. And Nelly Korda is leading the pack. She's 6 under par through her first round. She leads the pack at the LPGA Drive-On Championship, the first tour event for all players that will take place this weekend. You have Mian Ying at 4 under par. Lin is at 4 under par. Sam Kim is at 4 under par too, as well as Munoz, who's 4 under par as well. If you look at those are tied for third. Cortez Madsen is in second at 5 under par. Looking at some of the other ones, and tied for seventh is Marian Alex, Austin Kim, Ian Yeo, Jim Dryberg, as well as Megan Kang is at 2 under par. Somi Lee is at 2 under par. Brittany Lincombe is at 2 under par too. Lydia Ko, 2 under par as well. Sophia Garcia, 1 under par, tied for 20th with Holmquist, Gabby Lopez, and Celine Boutier, who is at 1 under par too. Lynn Grant, 1 under par as well too. Madam Sandstrom is 1 under par too. Allison Corpus, 1 under par as well too. Paula Ritu, 1 under par. Mel Reed, 1 under par. Nasa Hadaoka is 1 under par as well, tied for 20th. Lexi Thompson, 1 under par as well, tied for 20th as well. Lindy Duncan, tied for 40th at even par with Allie Ewing, Grace Kim, Cheyenne Knight, Andrea Lee, Minhan Lee, as well as Paula Kramer, who's even par as well. Jasmine Suwanapur, even par as well too. Leon Strom, even par as well. Lucy Lee, even par as well. In the plus mile, round right now, Mira Fossey, 1 over par too. Paula Delacour, 1 over par as well too. Gillum is 1 over par 2. Leona McGuire, 1 over par 2. And Brooke Henderson, 1 over par as well for this tournament. Stacey Lewis, 2 over par, tied for 80th right now. Patty Talavanakent, 3 over par. Georgia Hall, 3 over par 2. Jennifer Kupcho, 3 over par as well. Sarah Kemp, 4 over par. Jody Edwards Standoff, 4 over par, tied for 105th. Rhino, 204 over par, tied for 105th as well. Bailey Tardy, 5 over par. And Polly Mack is leading it all out at 9 over par for the Drive-On Championship that is happening right now in beautiful Florida. It's happening today, happening this weekend at Brighton Country Club in Florida. Par is 71. So we'll see how it all shakes out, the Drive-On Championship, as we make the trek towards the Dana Open this upcoming July. So there's that for you. Also, this weekend, big one. The road to WrestleMania begins. And before we get to my predictions for Royal Rumble, really quickly, I want to talk about what I watched last night with AEW a little bit. I watched AEW Dynamite last night, and I felt like it was a rush job. I did not like it. I did not like it at all, especially the last match of the night was Suzuki versus Adam Copeland, who was formerly Edge. Edge got the win in the match, but it felt like it's a rush match. Both guys were just dead tired. You could definitely tell they're older in age. I like the Sting and Darby Allin situation. They're going to be facing Big Bill and Ricky Starks in 2 weeks for the AEW Championship. I liked how we opened, though, with Samoa Joe coming out. And I do like this whole Swerve Strickland and Hangman Adam Page situation. I think that's good. That's a great storyline to keep going with AEW. I love that Thunder Rosa is back. She did a fantastic job last night. Deonna Purrazzo and Timeless Toni Storm, fantastic bit for them on that realm. I forget what else was other match that was. The Acclaimed, of course. My wife loves The Acclaimed, which is the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. As the Bullet Club Gold and The Acclaimed are now together for the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. I thought that match was a little bit of a rush match as well, too. But AEW, you kind of figure it's going to be, you know, a rush job when it comes to that. And, you know, I don't like the fact that they're going to be competing at 8 o'clock on Saturday night against the Royal Rumble. You know for a fact that everybody's going to be turning their attention to the Royal Rumble. And speaking of the Royal Rumble, let's get into the Royal Rumble. The road to WrestleMania begins this upcoming Saturday as the WWE presents Royal Rumble live in St. Petersburg, Florida, with the Royal Rumble match. And this is a big one. Of course, the big news, of course, WWE on Tuesday announced that they signed a deal to start streaming Monday Night Raw, and it'll be the exclusive home for Monday Night Raw on Netflix. Now, we don't know if they're going to be just sticking to Monday nights. We'll figure it out. As they said in an interview, that they're going to figure it out how it goes. But, of course, also The Rock announced that he was a board member of the TKO group, who owns a portion of WWE. TKO owns WWE as well as UFC. So there is that for you. Roman Reigns. I want to get to the card for WWE Royal Rumble really quickly. And the Royal Rumble card for 2024 is not a good card. It will commence, like I said, from St. Petersburg, Florida. Right now, we know it's the men's and the women's Royal Rumble match, and there's only two other matches that have been announced. Logan Paul is scheduled to face Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship match, which I think Kevin Owens is going to win that match. And then you've got the Universal Championship Fatal 4-Way match, which I think it's going to be a very good match, as the champion Roman Reigns will take on Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and with everybody saying L.A. Knight. And I think that match is going to play some outside interference by the man formerly known as Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I think The Rock's going to get involved with this match. I think Orton's going to probably win the title. I think Orton is going to win the title over Roman Reigns, which sets up who I think it's going to win the Royal Rumble match. Now, the Royal Rumble match, of course, if you don't know, it's a 30-man battle royal to throw over the top. The winner gets the championship match at WrestleMania this year, which commences in Philadelphia for WrestleMania 40. I think this year's Royal Rumble winner is going to be Cody Rhodes. I think he's going to win it back-to-back. I think the shocking return would be The Rock into the Royal Rumble. There's talk that he could come into the Royal Rumble and try to win, but I think Cody wins the match. I think it comes down to Cody. There's three people I'm going to put, if I had to put money on, to win the Royal Rumble. It's Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, And the third would be the wild card feature would be The Rock. If The Rock would come into the Royal Rumble match, then you know for a fact that it would be set up for that. He would set up and face Roman Reigns for the championship. But if he doesn't interfere into the Fatal 4-Way match, I guarantee The Rock will probably be in the Rumble. And the place will be going nuts. The roof will be blown off of Tropicana Field. So those are my three, but I would pick Cody Rhodes to win the Rumble. In the women's side of the things, of course, 30 women match. There's three, and I'm going to say four, possibly four women that could honestly, and the two champions, of course, were Io Sky, which is the WWE Women's Champion, as well as Rhea Ripley, who is the Women's World Heavyweight Champion. And they'll get to pick between the two of those women. Same way with the men's side, they would either pick Roman Reigns or whoever is holding the Universal Championship match or the World Heavyweight Championship, which is held by Seth Rollins, who right now is injured. And I'm surprised that Priest did not cash in on Monday night, which would have been a shocker, but I think he might cash in on the Monday after Rumble. So we'll see about that. But for the women's side of the Rumble, I'm torn between three, possibly four. Bayley, I think Bayley is an opportunity there to basically not take on to Rhea Ripley. I think she goes and turns to Io Sky and turns on Damage Control, since Damage Control is turning on her. So I think that's one side. Number two, Becky Lynch. If Becky Lynch wins this match, you guarantee that I think that Rhea Ripley match on Saturday night will be the main event. I think that would be an awesome main event. The man versus mommy. That'd be awesome. The third is Nia Jax. You gotta give her credit and due because how good she's performed in the ring lately. But there is the shocker. There's two shockers for me. One would be the return of AJ Lee because CM Punk back. Would be surprised if AJ just shows up all of a sudden, does a couple of eliminations, but she doesn't win the Rumble. You know, surprise. But the big one for me is Liv Morgan. Nobody's talking about Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan's been on social media. She's been getting back into the gym. She's getting back into the ring. That would be my shock and surprise. You know who also would be a big shock and surprise to come back for the men's side of things? Big E. I know he's not near what he wants to be, but it would be a surprise and a shock if he came back to the Rumble and wrestled at the Rumble. It'd be awesome. Be absolutely awesome. So there's my wrestling talk. So again, I have Owens. I have Orton winning the championship. If Rock interferes, if not interferes, then Roman will retain the men's Rumble. I have Cody Rhodes winning. My shocker being The Rock being in the Rumble. And my women's side, I gotta go with Becky Lynch to win the Rumble. My shock being that AJ Lee returns to the ring and wrestles and puts up a good fight. So there's my pick. And I hope we get some more fights on the card tomorrow on Friday Night SmackDown, because the two Rumble matches and then two other card matches, that's not going to satisfy. Unless you're going to make this Rumble a long Rumble, that's not going to cut 3 hours. That's not going to cut 3 hours. Unless you do the women's to start, you do the Owens match, you do the Reigns match, and then the men's side. I don't know. We'll see. Let's see how it all shakes out. That's the other sports talk, of course. Of course, we're getting closer to baseball season starting, which I'm excited for. I know you all are excited for it. I'm excited for it as well. Baseball season right around the corner. And, of course, you've got... what else I wanted to chat... Talk to you guys about. Oh, I know. So, there's not going to be any rants because we shared all the storm stories from this week. So this is the last segment we're going to talk about. Of course, There's been talk by yours truly to take over a position as a rink announcer for the Toledo Mobsters. And the talk has been, it's confirmed. There's talks of it. We're trying to figure it out and see what the schedule is going to be like for yours truly to be the PA announcer for the Toledo Ice House's Toledo Mobsters, which is a the Union Hockey League, which is a a semi-pro league. They've got a lot of teams from around the area, of course, and they're playing their games out at the Ice House on Sunday. A lot of games will be on Sundays, so I'll keep you posted on that. Like I mentioned before, tonight I'm having dinner with a bunch of us from the from A Christmas Carol from this past year. We're going to catch up and see how everybody's doing this year, and also give tribute to Bill and give him our props and just due. So I want to give Zach a thanks. If you're in downtown Toledo, of course, and if you're looking for a great place to eat, of course, there's a few good spots. Of course, the Blarney Irish Pub in downtown Toledo. My good friend Bill Klein over there, delicious food. The potato soup is fantastic, as well as the Reuben sandwiches and the burgers and everything like that. Fantastic. Pre or post game, come down to for any walleye game, head down to the Blarney Irish Pub. Also, got to give credit to Zach over at the at Manhattan's, who will be hosting us tonight. Zach, his family owns Manhattan's Pub and Cheer. Delicious poutine, great drinks, great atmosphere, live music. It's fantastic. Go down. It's over off of over on Adams Street off of 14th near Toledo School for the Arts. Head down there for a nice drink. Also, if you're in the drinking mood, my good friend Micah over at Wesley's Bar and Grill in downtown. Whether you need a beer before the game or after the game, head down to Wesley's Bar and Grill. In beautiful down in the uptown area of downtown Toledo. So there's the plugs there. Looking forward to seeing everybody tonight for dinner. Looking forward to a great weekend. So again, to recap really quickly, I will have for the Royal Rumble, Becky Lynch, Cody Rhodes to win, Roman to retain, Kevin Owens to win the U.S. Championship on Saturday night. Sunday for the conference championship football weekend, I have the Ravens and the over at 44.5 on the game on Sunday at 3:00 in BB&T Stadium in Baltimore. And the nightcap, I unfortunately have San Francisco and the money line and the under of 51.5 against the Lions. So it's going to be a fun weekend with the tribute to the 92-93 Toledo Storm hockey team. I hope you guys have a great weekend. If you're headed down to the Huntington Center this weekend, take a lot of pictures. Get the autographs. If you see me on Sunday, say hi. I'll be in Section 113, so go say hello to me. I'll be wearing my Storm jersey. And, yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend. So I hope you guys enjoyed this week of programs. We'll be back next week for another edition of All Andy Alford. We're probably going to shoot again for another either Tuesday night or Thursday. We're just depending on seeing how it goes. But thank you again for tuning into the show tonight. So as always, I'm pulling for you. We're all in this together. The game of life. Keep your stick on the ice. And to the teams you root for at home, and to my teams, go Jackets. Welcome back, Zach. Good luck in Calgary tonight, boys. Let's go Storm. Big weekend. Let's go Storm to honor the 92-93-93-94 Toledo Storm hockey team. Go Falcons. Beat the Rockets at Savage. And more birdies and less bogeys, because victory is sweetest when you have taste defeat. Have a great weekend, everybody, and a great rest of the week. I'll talk to you guys next week for another edition of All Andy Alford. I love you. Talk to you then. This has been a presentation of the All Andy Alford Network on the All Andy Alford Network, whether it's been on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Bleaker, however you listen to our show, wherever and whenever you listen to our podcast. Thank you for tuning into the show. And always, you can be a part of our show by following us on X at All Andy Alford, or on Facebook.com/AllAndyAlford, as we do our podcast live on Facebook Live. This show has been a presentation of the Spotify Podcast Network.